Hey, hey, welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Scott Pianowski, your jovial host, Sagat rated, loved on the internet, all that stuff. I need somebody smart and somebody fun, somebody cool to explain 2020 baseball to me. So we're going to throw that assignment to Paul Spohr. Follow him on Spohr. He writes all over the internet. He's a man of infinite wisdom and taste. Good afternoon, Mr. Spohr.
Scott, thanks so much for having me on. How are you?
Hanging in. You know, it's the strangest year of our lives. It's,
yep.
You know, I try not to internalize it too much because everybody's going through some version of weirdness. I must admit, when it comes to the baseball season, the fantasy baseball season, you know, when things went sour for the Marlins with the COVID outbreaks and they couldn't play for a long time, I had a dreadful feeling that like the season was minute to minute, hour to hour. That it could like all be plug pulled any day now. There's one week we put off the podcast for a day, and I'm not going to say we're out of the woods yet. I mean, obviously there's this stuff going on with positive tests are still creeping in. The Cardinals are finally getting back to playing after not a very long gap. There's a lot of the season is going to feel very artificial in a lot of ways. And okay, I've made my peace with that, but I just want to say that baseball's in a much better place today on August 17th than I envisioned like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was really, and it's not that I'm, you know, a sky is falling type or anything. I just thought there were too many obstacles. And if you hit any number of bumps in the road, the season would have to be stopped. And, you know, there have been problems. Obviously, the Marlins were a problem with their outbreak and the Cardinals and there's an incident with the Indians. And, you know, maybe something's going on in Cincinnati. We'll see. But they're in a better place today than I expected. I got to say that. I thought there was a decent chance that the season right now would either just be a colossal mess and why are they even playing or would actually already be canceled. So I feel like it's gone better than I expected.
No, I completely agree with that. And I felt similar feelings of dread with regards to the Marlins situation and thinking that it was going to be the end. And, you know, as the Cardinals stacked up off days, it is concerning. I will say it does. The reason I can't get totally comfortable with it still is because it feels like another outbreak in the Central or East would put us right back in that situation. Notice the West has been clean, and you talked about how Cincinnati might have a little something here with one guy. Hopefully they can contain it, and it's no big deal. But yeah, I totally felt that way too. I feel much better than I did back in the throes of the Marlins situation, but I do know that the rug can be pulled out any day.
So the Cardinals, I think, created, I guess, maybe is the better way to say it, a really unusual situation for fantasy. You know, when the Marlins went off the grid for a while, there weren't that many guys I was looking to play on the Marlins. You know, John VR is, you know, a fantasy god, maybe much better player probably in fantasy than real life. And, you know, Brian Anderson is a nice player, and they have some talent there. I don't want to, and they're playing pretty well. I mean, they have a decent record. So, you know, right now they're on pace to make the playoffs, and good for them if they can do that. But, you know, the Cardinals, it's like I have all these Jack Flaherty shares. I thought Goldschmidt's maybe slid a round or two lower than he should have. The other guys who I never would have cut in regular situations, who I thought maybe I had to consider cutting because I just needed to get a warm body on the field. So let's kind of pivot to 2020 strategy and how things are different. One of my main takeaways here is just you got to get a team on the field.
Exactly.
And I've had less leash. Nobody's ever saying, you know, put Acuna, please, on your IL. Or even if you don't have an IL, you save a guy like Acuna. But I'm showing loyalty to nobody who's in the middle half of my roster. And even guys who I thought I would never cut, I'm considering it. Because I feel like just getting the playing time and getting the at-bats and getting guys who are playing is a huge currency in 2020.
More than ever. And, you know, that is something that I think we kind of knew coming in. But I think even those of us who are on board with that underrated it to the degree that we're dealing with at this point. I think a big sort of point of demarcation with that was the fact that Bo Bichette was cut in a ton of leagues yesterday. Once the news came out that this was going to be severe, and we're talking early to mid-September, so, you know, upwards of a month, three weeks to a month here, he was cut, despite being arguably one of the very best players in all of fantasy so far this year. As somebody who's running, hitting for power, hitting 361, you got leagues like NFBC where there's no reserve, you got to move on. IL situations, of course, you hold him as much as you can, but say you've got Albies and Stanton and Bichette, you got to pick two out of the three. You know, I know a lot of leagues, I think ESPN specifically, their default is two ILs. I think you guys have one or two as well at Yahoo as the default. You have to make a decision. And I think Bichette is that guy that goes. And that to me was when it's like really brought home, like, this season's different than any other. And you can't be loyal to guys. You have to make cuts. We've made quick cuts in the leagues that I'm in, and I don't regret it. I just keep pushing forward. You know, I cut Verlander a couple weeks ago, or last week's waiver wire. And if he comes back and somebody gets him, fine. I don't care. I had to push forward with a new body. You can't get caught up in that. No time has ever been more fantasy football-esque than 2020 for baseball. It basically is a fantasy football type of scenario. Think about when football injuries happen. You cut guys very easily because they get big injuries in football. That's where we're at in baseball right now. So I churn and burn, not just with the back end of your roster, but the middle and even some of the upper end. Now we're getting into like seventh, eighth, ninth rounder, Benintendi. I thought he was a cut even potentially before the IL. I thought you could have made a case to cut him. Once he hit the IL, slam dunk cut as far as I was concerned.
I agree with Benintendi. And you know, it wasn't that I was sold on him having a great season, but I got seduced by the ADP being so affordable. Mm-hmm. I talked myself into it. And I think, well, he had a lot of excuse. I thought he was an excused absence to a large degree last year. And all those shares look dead in the water now. And you know, another guy who I think might be in that ballpark is Chris Davis. You know, Mr. 247 with power. We know what we're getting with Davis. And then last year, he has a bad year. This year, it gets off to a slow start. You know, Grossman's doing some really interesting things in Oakland. He's got a walk strikeout ratio that's even right now. He's got four stolen bases. He's got a little bit of power. This Oakland team in general just looks really fun. I mean, I've always been a huge Chapman guy, and Simeon shows that a player can radically improve his career. He was a terrible fielder. Now he's a great fielder. He didn't really have plate discipline. Now he has a good command of that. I would love it if Oakland like end up winning this World Series. You know, I mean, I'm nothing against the Yankees or the Dodgers, and people can decide what they feel about the Astros. I guess if the Dodgers won it, I'd feel like it was they finally had one coming to them and they won it. But I think now that my team, the Red Sox, is probably in the midst of like a 5-year rebuild, I'm an Oakland bandwagon guy. I think it's a really fun team, and I'm wondering if there's maybe a changing of the guard with this Grossman Davis situation. What do you see there?
I totally agree. He's another guy that I cut recently that normally I would give a much longer runway toward to see if he pulled out of it, got the power going. Once they kind of put him in a platoon, that was the final nail to say, you know what? He's not hitting well, and he's only going to be short side with an occasional start against a righty. He's got to go. He's UT only as well. I bought in, though. I was back in. I agree with you on the excused absence thing. He ran into that wall in Pittsburgh. There's a clear line of demarcation there where his production took a major turn after that. So it was very clearly the injury. You know, it's the Occam's razor sort of deal. No need to analyze it any further. That was it. Reasonably, you could expect him to have been healthy this year coming into the season and get back on track. Maybe not to the 247, 40 plus homers. Well, at least not, it would have to be prorated, of course. No one's going to hit 40 homers this year. But I thought he'd get back on track to being a strong power bat. And the discount was great. And it just hasn't come to fruition. And you have to wonder now, he'll be 33 next year. Somebody who's always had, you know, he's been a free swinger type. Has the league kind of figured him out? Plus a little bit of the bat slowing. I mean, you get worse every year. That's just the downward trend of aging. Some guys have, you know, ups and downs, but the overall trend that you should expect is straight down as far as aging goes. So you're going to have a DH only who's going to be 33, coming off of back-to-back rotten seasons unless he drastically turns it around this year. I think Chris Davis is much closer to Baltimore's Chris Davis now than he has been in a long time since they were both good. And then, of course, Chris with a K took off while Chris with a C went down. Now Chris with a K is moving down closer toward the Baltimore version.
I have a thing I call the cheese theory, which I use for fantasy football, which is once a player gets on the back nine and things go really bad, i.e. the cheese goes bad, I think it's a mistake to expect the cheese to all of a sudden go good. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if maybe Chris Davis might be a cheese player. He's on the back nine of his career. Nobody would doubt that. And to give Oakland credit, and I just referred to him as Grossman a minute ago. Let me just full respect. His name is Robbie Grossman. You know, he's kind of a journeyman. I think he's around 30. But whenever I see that walk strikeout rate around one and they offer something else, I mean, some guys have a really good like contact rate, like, but they don't offer any power, you know, or they're just guys who are just kind of banjo hitters. And when somebody has a little bit of pop, not afraid to run, and they have that command of the strike zone, And I think Oakland is a proactive team enough that they're not emotionally tied to who Chris Davis was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think they just want to win as many games as they can, put the best team they can in the field. I think they see an opportunity here. I even think, I'm not sure if we'll get much of a trade deadline, but I think Oakland might say, screw it. This, why not us? Why can't this be us? We have, you know, I don't see any box they don't check. Maybe they don't have as high end pitching as some other teams, although they have a lot of pitchers I do like.
And they got some developing pitching that could be that stud in the bullpen or in the playoffs, I should say.
I'm excited about these guys. I think I put in aggressive bids on Grossman. And again, I think you hit the nail on the head. We've been talking about this a little bit on the show in previous weeks. It's a fantasy football season. This, you know, there's no time to think about 5 weeks from now. Nope. I mean, we'll deal with that when we deal with that. Let's try to make the best. Let's play this season with a microscope, not with a telescope.
I completely agree. And you can almost make a case that thinking 5 days out is too much right now. And in leagues that do the half week, like the NFBC does, and other leagues do too, or daily transactions, you can think that close in advance there and think about the series that's upcoming. Can this guy help you for 3-4 games? And then you kind of make your decision from there. I think you and I have talked on one of my previous iterations on the show about how much we both like Oakland. Our main teams are Boston and Detroit, respectively, but we've always had a soft spot for Oakland. And I totally share in that. And even though my Tigers are kind of frisky this year and hanging out, I don't really have major expectations of them. So I keep a close eye on this Oakland team, and I want them to succeed. Yeah, any World Series that anybody wins is going to be a little bit muted from what it would be in a 162. We all know that. But they're playing the season that's in front of them. I don't want to take anything away from the player accomplishments or the team accomplishments that happen, just as I'm going to spend the money the same if I win fantasy leagues. People can say, oh, you won this. It was a 60-game season. You know what? They didn't give me counterfeit money. They didn't give me prorated money. I mean, I guess in some cases they did, but they're still giving you the money and the trophy. It all still counts. So yeah, if I'm Oakland, I do go in because they're not going to have to make massive trades either. It's a little piece here, a little piece there. Maybe one more piece for the bullpen. Maybe a little bit to strengthen the bench since they're using some of that bench depth with Grossman and Pinder playing a bit more. Laureano's obviously going to miss a few games with the suspension, but then he'll be back. And all of a sudden they've got a really strong team top to bottom. You mentioned they don't have that frontline pitching yet, but I love Frankie Montas. He's been panning out. If this back is just a little bit of a scratch and nothing else, then he's right back to it. Montas Lizardo, a 1-2 punch, lefty-righty type, that's really nice. Bassett's pretty decent. Fires gives you 5-6 decent more often than he doesn't. Manaea's kind of the wild card right now that he hasn't really been pitching well, and I'm not sure there's a lot that's going to turn. But once you get into the playoffs, you don't need five guys. So he could almost go in the bullpen, be that three-inning guy, and strengthen that aspect. So I think they have all the checkboxes, like you said, and they are a front runner right now. I actually, believe it or not, to backpat a little bit, I had them dethroning Houston coming into the season. So this whole thing hasn't been a terrible surprise to me as far as their performance. Now it's time for them to really turn it up in the playoffs, because that's always been the thing, right? Billy Beane's famous line, my S doesn't work in the playoffs. Here's the time. I think they have the team. They can put it together in this wild, crazy 2020 season.
You're listening to the words of Paul Sporer, who's rocking the Expos hat today. Gotta love that. And a man who's knowledgeable on all 30 clubs and even the ones that don't exist anymore. Before we get to your Frisky Tigers, and I promise you we're going to get to that, let me just hit really quickly on one thing you mentioned. You talked about like NFBC formats or some of the leagues that people may play in where you get the Monday lineup switch and then you get the Thursday or the Friday lineup switch. And in a lot of those leagues, you can't touch your pitching staff. You can only touch your field players. Has that affected your roster construction? Do you think it's more important? Because I'm thinking every week, like, I think I want a more pliable bench because with injuries and COVID opt-outs or a team could be tidal wave down, I just feel like I'm always going to want to make a lot of changes before the weekend kicks in.
Completely different this year as how I'm structuring my benches, where normally I would go half and half or maybe lean pitchers. It's a 7-man bench, so go 4-3, maybe sometimes even 5-2 with pitching. Now I'm completely the other way. I have one bench that's 6-1. Because my pitching is actually performing really well right now, so I don't need to have backups. So I got one guy who's backing up, and then six bench bats, most of whom have multi-eligibility too. So I am ready to go for things like COVID, let alone the matchups that I can play too. But if there is a COVID outage, then all of a sudden I will be able to make those moves. And so I've been staying on top of that, and it is definitely a change from previous years where I would be a lot more balanced on my bench. I think just do your pitching moves on the weekend, on the Sundays with the fab, because I'm burning and churning anyway. I really want to hold a guy on reserve right now anyway. If I'm not playing him, unless it's like an injury type of deal, if somebody who's too good to get rid of and it's a short-term injury, I'm getting rid of them anyway. They got Colorado coming up. Fine, I'll cut him and try to get him back next week, or somebody else can have him. I'm going to get the next guy up anyway. So yes, it has definitely changed things.
That is a great rule. If he's not good enough to play right now, he's not good enough usually to hold. I made an exception with Framber Valdez because he's just been so good.
And look, Colorado, he's the one guy in that in that 6-1. Framber Valdez was now moved to the bench for the other pitcher that was on the reserve there.
And I think, look, this is a hack that I think most good fantasy players know, but that multiple position guy, man, it's so great to have a player on your bench or even in your active lineup who can play anywhere. So therefore, when replacement kicks in, you can just put the best player in.
You can get anybody.
Be position agnostic, you know, because you have that guy who floats all around the field. And there's a bunch of them this year. You know, David Fletcher covers a lot of positions when he's healthy.
And he's
Nico Goodrum
great.
Covers a lot of positions. And let's get to your Frisky Tigers. I'm just going to admit this up front. A lot of times I'm the killjoy. I'm the bucket of cold water with prospects, only because when they come up, I think sometimes it's just an inclination to expect guys to be great right away. I was trying to make a trade this past weekend, and somebody was trying to throw Alec Baum into the trade coming to me and expecting me to throw in John VR. I'm just never going to play that way.
VR's not a throw-in?
No, he's not a throw-in. You know, but maybe Baum will be good. Maybe he won't be. He was a respected prospect. It wasn't like he was like a top 10 guy. But, hey, here are the Tigers off to a better start than expected. I know they can't beat Cleveland for some reason, what, 20 losses in a row. But, thankfully, they don't have to play the Indians every game. So they're bringing up their three best prospects, including Casey Mize, who, you know, number one pick a couple of years ago. People are excited about him, the Auburn prospect. How are you feeling about the kids in Detroit? And who, if anybody, would you give a start to or give a pickup to right away?
I'm cool with them making this move. You know, it's a bummer that it kind of comes on the heels of a Cleveland series. Maybe could have done it beforehand, given how much Cleveland has owned them. And maybe Tariq Skubal or Casey Mize could have broken that streak there. They do have three against them coming up this weekend, and Skubal will get one of those starts. Mize will not because he's starting on Wednesday. But I like it. Tariq Skubal, the lefty, Casey Mize, a righty, and Isaac Paredes, an infielder who can bounce around and get some playing time all over the diamond there. Mostly in the middle infield. I like the moves. Be aggressive here. I don't think it's something that's going to, especially with pitchers, finagling that one extra year. When you're planning that far ahead for pitchers, I think you're being too arrogant, really. Use the bullets when they're ready, first off. And secondly, you have no idea what's going to happen down the line. So if you're planning for the seventh year on somebody, I don't know. I think you get too far out in front of your skis, as you put it in our rundown. They're 9-10. They're actually in a position to do something. I don't really think that they have a good enough team to necessarily do that, but they certainly don't as is. Calling up three guys like this to get an infusion of talent absolutely changes that the makeup of that team, though. And if they can hang around and all of a sudden they are, you know, getting a big series win against Cleveland maybe this weekend where they totally turn the tide on the losing streak and take two of three somehow, that would be huge for them. And all of a sudden the offense has been playing well, and you get Isaac Paredes maybe comes in and does some things because they lost CJ Cron, a big bat. Pitching is what's going to carry them, though. And for the first time since, I don't know, Mike Hinneman, they actually have some relievers that you can rely on. And as a Tigers fan that I am, when they come into the game, I'm not like, okay, well, now things are getting worse. Because throughout all that run, it was elite starters and elite hitting. And once the starter came out, it was a toss-up. We have no idea what's going to happen with all these clowns that would come in, even the guys who were the closers. But Gregory Soto, a lefty, is doing his best Josh Hader, Aroldis Chapman impersonation on the field. The dude throws high 90s with a devastating slider. Jose Cisnero looks like somebody who's pretty decent. John Schreiber has been pretty solid as well. Like, the fact that they have multiple guys, one of their worst guys has actually been Joey Mendez, their closer. Now, he's gotten beaten up in a couple outings, and when you only have 8 innings as a reliever, that can really inflate the numbers. But even he doesn't completely scare me when he comes in. So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I would not project them to, but I like this move because I don't think it undercuts their rebuild by any tangible stretch, and you get to really show that, hey, we're going to give it a shot here because we're one game under. We're doing way better than we thought we would. And as far as picking them up in fantasy, Skubal and Mize are 1 and 1A for me. Skubal's got a little bit higher strikeout upside. Mai's probably the overall ratio upside. And then Paredes is a little bit further down, maybe an AL only super deep mixed league perhaps as somebody who can bounce around for you. But both pitchers, I think, are at least all formats guys to start before we see what they can do.
So we know, let's talk a little bit about saves. And we know save striation is the thing. More pitchers are getting saves, and the better closers are getting fewer of them. And it's just, you're going to need less saves to compete in your league, you know, be it over a six-month season, be it over a two-month season. And I've come to grips with this. It doesn't bother me anymore because, for one thing, I don't need to be right that often to actually be competitive in saves. I felt it was very emotionally acceptable to punt or semi-punt saves in a draft, knowing that they would just be out there to get. And what I've been trying to do, and this also ties into chasing wins, right? Because look, I know it's kind of a dirty word or dirty phrase to say chasing wins, but it's wins are a category. We need wins. And I think the old school way of chasing wins was like, okay, let's try to find a Mike Fiers type who's going twice. Maybe he's too good of an example now because he's probably owned in a lot of leagues. But let's try to find somebody reliable, going twice, isn't likely to kill me. Maybe he'll win one of those games. If I get really lucky, maybe he'll win two of those games. Now, we see on Sunday, Dustin May had the classic 2020 start. The Dodgers raced to an easy win, and May couldn't go five innings. And I guess, could they have left him in for two more outs? I guess they could have. He wasn't at 100 pitches yet. But that's pretty common. So I'm kind of all over the place here. Let me tidy this up. I think chasing wins now may be more of a relief pitcher question than it is a starting pitcher question. And also, I love these relievers who have the high strikeouts, who pitch for winning teams, who may be in the middle of a game where you can grab that vulture win because your starter isn't going to go long enough, or maybe the starter comes out when the game is tied or the lead flip-flops, whatever it is. So, you know, Chad Green on the Yankees, you know, interested. I knew nothing about Matt Foster before this season. He's got a bunch of strikeouts for the White Sox. Interested. You know, we saw last year Nick Anderson, right? Guy had a really checkered career, had some personal problems, finally put it together. At one point, people were like, wait a minute, this guy's got one walk and 17 strikeouts. I'm just going to pick him up because of that reason. I'm grabbing a bunch of these relievers when I can. Even somebody like an old retreat like Sergio Romo, he's on a good team. He occasionally closes. The Twins are probably going to win 60% of their games. I think you're better off with him than like trying to figure out what Gabe Kapler is doing in San Francisco. So to me, chasing wins is a relief thing. A reliever on a good team with a really good strikeout to walk rate. These are really basic things. Joaquin Soria, another guy I have a bunch of interest in. Where are you at with relievers right now? And do you think I'm right that maybe, you know, it doesn't have to have saves, but just, you know, these high ratio guys, walk strikeout ratios on good teams, maybe it's better than trying to figure out, oh, I can get some pirate saves.
I think you're completely right. Right now, relievers have 47% of the wins, which is an insane figure.
Insane.
I think it was like 60-40 last year. And you know, that's probably crazy compared to what it was in the 90s, 80s, and before that, when I'm sure it was closer to like 80-20, if not like a 90-10. And these up-and-coming relievers with amazing strikeout rates and great ratios have been on the radar for a while. Josh Hader before he was a closer, Dellin Betances before he was a closer, guys like that, Andrew Miller. And we're always looking for the next one, though, and I've heard you talk about this on this show and ones where you're doing the guest appearance. I don't want to pay for the guy that we already know. I want to find the next one. And it's funny that we're talking about this today because I'm actually working on an article at Fangraphs covering the group of the next guys up, including Matt Foster, who you mentioned, including Gregory Soto, who I mentioned earlier on the Tigers. Josh Stoman on the KC Royals has been insane. Jordan Romano just gave up his first run on the year for Toronto, so he has a 0.90 ERA. James Karinchak's probably the known one right now, and because Brad Hand's been a little wobbly, people have him, but it is Brad Hand's job. So if people gave up on Karinchak thinking that, oh, he's not going to get the saves, I'd get him back because of the strikeouts ratios and potentials for win, because he can pitch in the seventh and eighth inning when the game is often decided. Ryan Barucki. On the veteran side, you mentioned Romo. Jake McGee's another one who's kind of rebuilt his career with the Dodgers. That's a great team. And you want the guys on the good teams, especially because they can really be in the middle of potential wins. Tanner Rainey, Devin Williams, and Ryan Helsley are on Washington, Milwaukee, and St. Louis, respectively. I know Helsley's gotten some closer buzz as well, so maybe he's not as available. But most of those guys are going to be widely available. And I do think that trolling for wins via relievers and maybe having to, quote-unquote, settle for some saves instead – just because you're getting high value relievers is a great way to play it right now. I'd rather do that than take the fifth starter, like you said, like a Mike Fiers, like a fourth, fifth starter on a good team, but then he only goes four, doesn't even pitch that well, and doesn't get the win. Like, that's the ultimate disaster. And like you said, that's the peak 2020 start right now, where the team wins. You're like, oh, let me check this box score. I must have gotten my win. No, he went 4 2/3, gave up 3 runs, and only struck out 2. And you're like, why did I pick that start up? So I completely agree with you on that, that relievers are the way to go right now. And there's a lot of them out there that, even if they don't give you the wins, because we're trolling for wins, we don't know how to get, we don't know that they're going to be guaranteed, you're still going to get the ratios and the strikeouts. You may steal a save. You may steal a win. You got to go out and get these guys, though, because that's where you're really going to make some hay. And you don't need as many innings to compete this year because starters aren't getting the innings anyway. So you're not even necessarily falling behind in terms of overall strikeouts. So I absolutely think that's a great strategy right now. And hopefully that article that I finish either today or Tuesday the 18th will be helpful for people finding the next big thing.
Yeah, make sure you're reading everything that Paul writes for FanGraphs. It's just a treasure trove of information there. And I think somewhere where a fantasy owner needs to be every day. And we've tried to upgrade our advanced stats game tools in the game as well at Yahoo. So, you know, we're trying to step it up too. But, you know, FanGraphs, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. Just an invaluable resource. And you know, just one more thing, just to put a period on these relievers, these high strikeout relievers. You know, in a lot of Yahoo leagues, we play with an innings cap format. I know some other fantasy leagues, you can only have so many starts in a season or in a week. So this is a great way. If you're in a league that caps your starts or caps your innings, you're basically playing strikeout per nine as the category, not the strikeouts.
Exactly.
You need to, and I have a couple teams right now, I'm not proud to say this, have more innings than they have strikeouts. I need to fix that. You need to have more strikeouts than innings in 2020. The world of the three true outcomes of dominating the game, right? So what do I do? And again, the beauty of these guys, just about every name you mentioned, I mean, you know, Karinchak was kind of buzzy before the season. He might have been drafted in some deeper leagues. I bet 90% of the guys we mentioned weren't anywhere on draft radars before the season. You know, and that's why I like to call these guys like the Nick Anderson All-Stars, because nobody drafted Nick Anderson last year. There was no reason to draft him. Mm-hmm. These guys will always come out of the woodwork. And remember, for all the people who are going to see small sample size, walks and strikeouts are really quickly stabilizing stats. So there exactly. can be value. We can actually take some – I think it's more likely to be realistic that these guys have popped after they've done it 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, a couple of guys will collapse. You'll maybe be able to get overworked or maybe they'll get figured out. I mean, that, this is part of the game. But I think every year this is a cheat code, and you get in for nothing. They're on your waiver wire. And you know, I mean, Staumont right now, I think he's owned in 6% of leagues, and that's after he's been kind of picked up aggressively over the past week. He was probably at 0 to 1% for a solid week. So I can't say enough, and I'm looking forward to reading your piece on FanGraphs, that I really think this is like a cheat code. This is such a great way to hack into good ratios and good strikeouts.
It's always been a great avenue to get some stuff. And I think this year it works better than ever because of the shortened season. Because sometimes I think folks overdo it. They get 2-3 of these guys and then they are falling behind in volume. But this year you can do it. You can put 2 on your roster and you're really not falling that far behind, especially if you happen to have like a Bieber who is leading, you know, leading the world and everything else and giving you the innings or any other ace, by the way. I just happen to name him because I think we're going to talk about him. But that also helps too. And you can never have too good of ratios or too many strikeouts. So don't feel like you don't need these guys just because you're pitching well. This is a great way to avoid the blow up too, because one thing, I have some teams that are pitching pretty well right now. Now I'm afraid of the blow up. I don't want to ruin it with the 8 earned run outing. So I don't want to pick up a bunch of clowns. And relievers can get blown up too. You know, they can give up, they can get Trevor Gott all of a sudden and give up 6 runs in an outing and go the other way too. But starters that you're picking up off the waivers as streamers are much more likely to get that hit. And I want to avoid that. So give me Josh Stillman instead of, like, I don't know, Jake Arrieta, who's actually been pitching decently. I thought about him because my partner and I in the main event, we talked about him and I was like, I don't want him anywhere near the team. And to his credit, he's pitched pretty decently. But I want to avoid those potential pitfalls with the streaming starters right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Bieber. He was on the preliminary script. And let's get to him now. I just clicked up. I had no idea for sure what was going to pop up. But we have a thing on Yahoo, a tool called MVPs, which is how often a player in the Yahoo fantasy game shows up on one of the best 500 Yahoo public teams. And I just thought Bieber or Tatis, it's going to be one of those two guys at the top. And it's Bieber's first. Tatis is second. Sonny Gray is third. Dylan Bundy is fourth. Lance Lynn is fifth. And so four pitchers and Tatis. And one thing that these guys have in common, not only have none of them ever been in my kitchen, I don't think I have any of these guys rostered. Now, Bundy was somebody I was into. For some reason, I didn't fall into Bundy. I would have drafted Tatis. The first round has so many good players. You know, if I drafted Christian Yelich instead of Tatis, how wrong could I really be? I mean,
exactly.
If Tatis is having a great season, yeah. Yelich isn't. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to regret drafting Ronald Acuna when I draft him. He got hurt. You know, that happens. I'm sure I had chances for Bieber. I'm sure I had chances for Sonny Gray. And Lance Lynn is a guy. I was a big fan of him with the Cardinals. He went bad in Minnesota. He was at a certain stage of his career. He had a certain body type. I just was afraid to believe in Lance Lynn. And all last year, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, telling people they should trade Lance Lynn. I didn't believe it. It's Arlington. The ball's going to fly out of there. Of course, that's out the window now with the new park. But last year, I was calling for Lance Lynn to fall apart. It never happened. Or I guess Lynn wasn't on the Rangers last year, but calling. There's something in the Rangers I was calling to fall apart. Here's the bottom line with Lynn. I got him right for a long time. He went bad. My cheese theory, that worked against me. And now I have no Lance Lynn. It's really sad. I have no Bieber. It's not that Bieber like goes out and strikes out guys. He might strike out 13 guys. I feel like every baseball highlight package has Tatis in it doing something incredible. I still can't believe that middle in slider that he hit out the right field in San Francisco. I know the park's different this year, but still. Many guys can do that? Did you land on Bundy this year? Lynn, Bieber, some of these guys, Tatis. Are you riding this wave? Are you with me thinking, how did I screw this up?
Bundy was a big one for me, a late guy that I was saying, go ahead and go get him, take a shot on him, getting out of Baltimore. Even though they have a new regime, I haven't seen them develop any pitching yet.
Sure.
But I thought getting out of that park, because he's a home run guy, and getting out of that division, I thought that alone was worth taking a shot. He has an ace slider, right? If he can get anything else to go around that ace slider, let's do it. Well, he's leaning into that slider, moving away from the fastball, which is his worst pitch, and the results have been incredible for Bundy. Even as somebody who really believed in him, obviously I did not see this kind of excellence coming. Thankfully, I do have him on some ball clubs. Lynn was somebody I've always kind of liked. Going back to his St. Louis days, I just workhorse. He just fits that idea so perfectly. Probably because he's a bigger dude too, and you know he can just eat up innings like crazy. And then, he got hurt with St. Louis, came back, was good. Like you said, went south in Minnesota, but there was that little 54-inning stint with the Yankees in that season that he turned things around, and his skills were off the charts. He only had a 4.14 ERA, but a 2.17 FIP for Lynn suggested there's a little something here. I remember when Texas signed him, and some folks derided the move at 3.30, and it's not that I thought he would be this good. I can't even pretend that for a second. But I didn't understand why people thought 3.30 for somebody like this was bad in any way, shape, or form. $10 million? Do you know how bad you can be as a starter to be worth $10 million in the majors if you're going 170-plus innings? Like, you can carry a 5.10 ERA, and that's technically worth 10 mil. So I thought that was a steal of a deal. And of course, then he busted out last year, looked excellent. And then this year, he's hit another level. And the crazy thing about it is while the league themselves are moving away from fastballs, I mentioned what Bundy's doing, and he's very much with the new hip thing to get away from fastballs. Lance Lynn is essentially fastball only. That's how he succeeds. And there are a few different fastballs, but still, it is a very fastball-heavy approach. And I'm a sucker for fastball command. So that's why I thought that he could age pretty well, is because fastball command is there. He has multiple fastballs. And I just thought, hey, he's not too bad. I only got one share of him across six different teams. So it's not like I'm super, super invested. But he's somebody that I wasn't too afraid of, because I thought somebody with that kind of fastball command and strikeout ability should at least give me like a 4.20 ERA. And that wouldn't have been what I expected or what I wanted, but I thought the floor was pretty safe. I thought the Minnesota fall down was an anomaly relative to what Lynn should be expected to do. And so that's why I was in on him. Bieber, I wasn't, because I was taking Clevinger instead of Bieber. So I did miss out there. But Bieber is Kluber right now. It's an easy comp. Some might call it lazy. I don't think so. I think it's just he's the next Kluber right now, right down to the stoicism that they share on the mound. But he's doing virtually everything that Kluber did, right down to the fact that their fastballs were a little bit weak, but everything else was so amazing that it just didn't matter. I think he has to be what, the second or third pitcher ranked next year behind maybe DeGrom and Cole?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the recent pitcher list, top 100 pitchers that came out Monday from Nick Pollock, who, of course, does great work. And another daily stop, as far as I'm concerned, is their feed and their site. I think he had Bieber number two for the rest of the season. I know it's different than what you were talking about. I couldn't argue with it.
Yeah. Can't argue with that at all behind Cole and, you know, DeGrom right there. So I think you take those three. For me, it was Cole. It was DeGrom, Verlander, Scherzer, Cole, those four. And I say rank them how you want it. I had actually had Cole fourth, just a little bit of the new guy with the big deal. I'm not as keen on drafting those guys. But now I think Bieber takes Verlander's spot, and you can still do the same thing. Obviously, Scherzer will be a year older. Obviously, everyone will, but he's starting to get into his mid-30s. So if you want to kind of push him off to the side in this Cole, Bieber, DeGrom, and then you rank those three how you want, I think that's where we're at right now, though. I think Bieber's firmly in that top echelon, both for the rest of the year and going into 21.
So I'll just take a hit on something I did. Not that this trade may not work out for me, but I think I just should have taken more time to research it. On the Friends and Family League, where I'm actually in second, I'm feeling pretty good. I have a lot of offense. I don't have a lot of pitching. We have a transaction cap in that league, so I can't just stream until the cows come home. Mm-hmm. And I wrote to a few people who had different types of statistical shape than I did. I wrote to teams that had good pitching and not as much offense. And my friend Frank Schwab, Yahoo colleague, great guy, he said, hey, how about Patrick Corbin for Gleyber Torres? And maybe Frank got me at the right time, because I've been lowballed so many times about with silly trade offers. I just thought, Gleyber's obviously better than he's shown this year. He had a four-hit game recently. I'm not worried about Torres, but I've always been a Corbin guy. I know he's just a two-pitch pitcher, but I just feel he's just somebody. Every time he pitches, I expect 6 to 8 strikeouts, a good chance at a win. He'll go what passes as for deep in a game these days. I know he pitched poorly against the Orioles, but that lineup's been kind of plucky this year. So
they're top five in WRC plus, Scott.
Right. So I was just glad. I was just glad that, okay, this is a reasonable offer. Frank's my friend. I feel like making a trade. So I clicked, let's do it. And then I was looking at the pitcher list ranks, and I just noticed that, you know, they had Corbin as like one of their biggest droppers, dropping 18 spots. And I'm thinking, well, I know he pitched bad against Baltimore. I didn't watch that start. It was on the weekend. I was probably teeing off on the seventh hole when Patrick Corbin was pitching. So, you know, fantasy hack. Never leave the house during the weekend. You should be watching baseball all the time. So I didn't even go on his Fangraphs page. I didn't even go on his Savant page and do any research before I went for Corbin, which is, that should be standard when you make any fantasy move, right? It's just get a reality check. And so I'm talking to Twitter about a few people. Yeah, didn't you notice his velocity was down? And I'm like, this is freely available information. I didn't know it, didn't take advantage of it. And you know what? The thing is, the shape of my team, my ERA is already kind of screwy. My whip is okay. If Corbin can just get me the strikeouts and pitches the full season, even if his ERA was like high threes or even like four, it probably wouldn't even hurt me. I'd probably get what I wanted anyway.
What you're looking for. Yeah.
But I just feel stupid for not having done what I think is perfunctory. Just you have to do your diligence before you make a trade. How do you feel about Corbin? And do you have anything to share about the trading experience?
Yeah, I think your general point is right in terms of, you know, make sure you're doing the research and everything. But with regards to Corbin specifically, I'm not sure that he necessarily deserved the drop that Nick gave him. And, you know, we see eye to eye on so much pitching wise that when we do have a disagreement, it is kind of a surprise and worth diving into. Yeah, he is down 2 miles an hour, Corbin is. But I'm not sure that that's something that I'm massively concerned about, with no chatter of any sort of injury issue or anything like that. The fastball isn't how he succeeds anyway. It really is that slider. And, you know, it's so he was 91 in 18, 92 last year, and he's 90 this year. I don't know that I'm seeing enough of a difference there. I understand that it's 2 points down from last year, but I don't know that I'm seeing enough of a difference that I have to be afraid of him. That said, too, the guy you traded, Torres, we don't expect him to stay as a subpar WRC plus guy. He's at 95, where 100 is average, and he had a 125 last year. But I also don't think he's necessarily going to surge to the point where he's going to end the season back at 125, which, of course, would mean he'd be performing way better than that. So I think bottom line is the deal is still going to be fine for you. As far as Corbin goes, though, this reminds me of something. And if it signifies an injury, then Nick wins, and that's all there is to it. But I haven't heard anything like that, so I'm not jumping to that. But one of the things I heard on Eno and Derek Van Riper's podcast, Rates and Barrels, was too often we focus on what a guy doesn't do, and it blocks out everything that they do. And they were talking about this through the prism of Tatis and his strikeout rate, and how much we talked about he strikes out too much. Can he be a first rounder with that kind of strikeout rate? Forgetting for the fact that when he does make contact, it's amazing, and he's speedy, and he's at shortstop. Granted, shortstop was deep, but still, all these other checkboxes that he hits. Well, with Corbin, I think it's a similar type of thing. Okay, it's down a little bit. The velocity is, but he has an amazing whip. The ERA is still useful at 391. He's still getting a perfectly solid strikeout rate at 23%, albeit it is down from last year. But the walk rate's excellent. He's not allowing some, you know, obscene amount of homers. He did get beat up by Baltimore, but like I said, they're a legitimately great offense thus far. I don't know if it'll continue, but I'm not even holding that against him as some sort of big issue. He beat the Mets and twice and the Yankees once in his other starts. And so I'm not really worried about Corbin. I think an 18-point drop was a little bit too severe for what they did, for what he's been doing this year. I think the trade you made is just fine. I certainly wouldn't be worried too much about that. I agree with you on doing the due diligence, checking everything, but I don't know if you had gone to his page, seen the minus two, that you would have necessarily pulled back on the trade. I think I would have still done it if I'm in your situation where I need the pitching, because I really like Corbin. He's a steady Eddie, and I think his floor is strong enough that even if you got a 420, 120 the rest of the way, like you said, that would probably still help you in the aggregate.
In my defense, I will say this. The important research that I did do, and I think everybody should do, is I tried to solve the category puzzle of my team and of my league.
Yes.
And that's what trading is. It's trying important. To massage the categories in your favor and to realize, where do I have surplus? What categories can I not really compete in? You know, if you're 10 home runs ahead of everybody, you may be in a position to trade power. If you're, you know, 12 stolen bases behind everybody, you might just have to bag speed. Although I dare anybody to be that far behind in stolen bases this year, but and I almost feel like every stolen base is like every save. We have to audit them and go to CSI mode to figure out what's going on. But
exactly.
Thankfully, we need fewer saves to compete than ever before. But so I did the diligence as far as figuring out the categorical fit. It's just that maybe I should have looked at Corbin more. I still, and who knows, maybe I would have sent a note to you, or I would have sent a note to Nick, or, you know, get a second opinion. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I usually am pretty decisive, but, you know, sometimes I'm not sure what to do about a guy. Let me close with this. I'll give you another chance to make me feel good. I thought Chris Paddock was going to be the man. Look, it's 2020. It's going to be a two-month season. If Paddock doesn't have a great year, I'll probably still be eager to draft him next year if there's no injury concern. But
same.
He's pitched poorly a few times. I'm getting a little nervous about Paddock. What say you?
I say don't worry. And this is the nature of this is where we go. And we understand that it's a short season. But this is one of those ones where you can't really put any action on it, despite the fact that we have to acknowledge, you know, it's a short season and all that. Because if we had done this a week ago or on August 9th after his start previous to that one, the one against the Dodgers, he had a 3.18 ERA. And I don't think that you'd be feeling it any type of way about it with 21 strikeouts and 22 and two-thirds innings and only three walks. I think you'd be still feeling like he was quote-unquote paddocking. But then he gets beat up by the Dodgers of all teams, a team that, again, you can't hang your head when somebody gets murked by them, even if it's somebody who is ostensibly a fantasy ace in Paddock. I'm not too worried about that at all. If there is one concern, it's that the home runs are there right now at a 2.5 per nine clip, including three against those Dodgers. He had given up two the game before that and one in each of the previous two. So, you know, seven homers in five games, that's a little bit of something. But overall, you rewind and think about how we would be right now in early May, which is about what the comparable of what this would be right now. And we certainly wouldn't be that worried. Now, we don't have enough time to make up the 5 months that we would have in a normal season. But if I look at the core things that are going on with Paddock, I don't see any reason for concern. You take the one against the Dodgers on the chin and you keep moving forward. I would not worry about him. In fact, I'd be open to buying if he were being sold somewhere.
The words of Paul Sporer. You follow him on Twitter at S-P-O-R-E-R. Of course, his work is at Fangraphs. He works at many other different outlets. Just one of the best voices and minds we have in the fantasy space right now. We're going to transition to our draft, and sometimes we draft silly things, and this is going to be a silly draft. We're going to draft baseball positions. There aren't that many baseball positions. In fact, I'm mandating that this will be a snake draft. We usually don't snake draft. We usually just go back and forth. But yeah, baseball positions is our draft. Paul, you're the guest.
For cuteness, though.
Yeah, we're going for cuteness.
can we get a little funky with it?
Well, you have the first pick. How funky are you going to get?
Well, with the first pick, I'm not. I'm just going to go straight up catcher. That's the position I played growing up. I love the catcher. He's the most important guy on the field. He runs everything in the action all the time. You know, if I'd hit my growth spurt, I'd have been like Joe Mauer or Matt Wieters back there. But I grew up at a relatively average height, so I played catcher growing up. Turns out, though, by the time I reached high school, I was pretty much Jeff Mathis. You know, I could throw the ball, I could throw guys out, call a pretty good game insofar as I was even allowed to call a game, and, you know, had good rapport with my pitchers, but couldn't hit a lick. So most high school teams don't need a Jeff Mathis out there, but the catcher position has always been one that I love, and a great catcher can go a long way. In fact, they often get hidden. Not these days. I think we have stats that help highlight what they do, but the catcher, I'm going to stick with the traditional positions and go with that as my first pick.
Oops, wow, sorry, that's an aggressive pick at one. I much respect a catcher. I think everybody who plays sports should play goalie at one point, should play catcher at one point. Yep. It's kind of cool just to be involved in every play and to be that field general. You're the one person on the field who can see everybody else. Let me ask you this. You talk about them getting more recognition now than ever before. Do you think Yadier Molina, as his career, say he never plays again, is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes, I do think so. I think he's hit enough with transcendent defense as the pretty much unmitigated best defender more often than not throughout his career. Catcher's underrepresented, probably because we've had a hard time calculating these things, and we're doing our best to do that these days with framing and everything. I do think, yes, he is a Hall of Famer, even as essentially a league average hitter. But he spiked some brilliant seasons at the dish and always, always a transcendent defender. So, yes, I would put him in the Hall of Fame. And Joe Mauer, by the way, who's kind of on the other end of things.
You think Posey's already in too?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Posey will make it. I don't know if the other two will, but I'd be fine with all three of them. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for for Molina. And a lot of times I've just picked Cardinal pitchers because there's something reassuring about knowing Molina's going to block every pitch in the dirt. He's going to shut down the running game. I think he's a good target to throw to. I do believe, I know all this stuff isn't always quantifiable, and maybe sometimes it's noise in some cases. I don't think it's noise with Molina. I'm excited. I'm going to get my first two picks in this snake draft. All right. I'm going to start with starting pitcher.
Between those two for me. So I knew I was leaving it open, but I had to get catcher.
The odds of any baseball game are going to swing on the pitcher. That's who we want to know. Who's pitching tonight? I know it's changed a little bit because teams have openers and some starters may not go as deep. So the starting pitcher isn't as valuable today as it was 5 or 10 years ago. But it's still the first question. When you're going to a baseball game, it's still who's playing and who's pitching. That's the thing you want to know. And if you were watching a Little League game or a high school game, the most talented kid would be at one of two positions. He'd either be starting pitcher or my next pick, which is going to be shortstop.
Shortstop.
Everybody wants to play shortstop. A ton of prospects start as shortstops, and it's like, well, do they move to second? Do they move to the outfield? They move to third base? Chipper Jones was a shortstop. Gary Sheffield was a shortstop. Mike Morris was a shortstop. That's where we all start. That's when I was in Little League. That's where everybody wanted to play. Everybody wanted to pitch. Everybody wanted to be a shortstop, and if you're one of the better kids of the team, you'd get a chance at those positions. Other people would be farmed around to other spots. I just think that if you want to, and this is maybe more of an amateur baseball commentary, although we've also seen with shortstop, you know, look at some of that. We've done some of those retro drafts, and you go in those 80s, some of those 80s seasons where the shortstop hitting pool had like two or three good options. That was it.
Nothing. Yeah.
Now, I thought this year was the most deep shortstop pool I've ever seen in fantasy baseball.
Literally ever. Literally ever. I completely agree there. And the way it's changed is just unbelievable. I mean, back in the day, if you could pick it, it truly did not matter how much you could hit. As long as you played your position and played it well, you could be a starting shortstop for a team easily. And it's crazy. Like you said, those retro drafts, we got shortstops who, like, you know, had like a 115 WRC plus, 20 homers and 8 steals going in the second round because they were the best shortstop by leaps and bounds. And now, like you said, you know, this year was the deepest it's ever been. I have one team with 4 shortstops on it because of positional flexibility with the shortstop, middle, util, and then one of them who qualified at second. I drained the pool there and I had no problem doing it. So great picks there. Starting pitcher was my other consideration.
By the way, before you go with your next pick, I want to say one other thing about shortstops. It's going back a ways, but your Detroit Tigers, Ed Brinkman was a defensive wizard at shortstop. One year he hit 203 and received his slash was 203, 259, 279, also known as horrible. He had an OPS plus of 59. So he's 41% below a league average OPS plus guy. And he was ninth in the MVP voting. Now, the 70s were different. That's the crazy. Offensive shape of the game was different, but still,
yeah,
59 OPS plus. It's almost like I don't care if you're the Ozzie Smith. Maybe you shouldn't even be in the field. This guy was getting MVP, down ballot MVP consideration. So the game's a lot different now.
That's truly bananas, and it's really amazing. I wasn't sure if you were going with that because I was familiar with that, or another Tiger story about shortstop that actually kind of goes the other way. But the 68 World Series, mm-hmm. they'd had some injuries. To where I believe it was Kaline who was out, but then he comes back, and to make sure they fit everybody in, they took their shortstop off the field, who was Ray Euler, who was one of these no hit. I mean, he has a 48 career OPS plus, but could pick it, and put Mickey Stanley, their center fielder, at short to make sure that they were getting everybody into the lineup there, and so they kind of went the other way with it in the World Series of all things, in that 68 World Series against the Cardinals. So those are the two Tiger shortstop things that that I heard a lot about growing up, because my dad used to tell me the story about Brinkman as well. But great picks there, could not go wrong. I knew you'd take at least the starting pitcher off the board there, and I figured you might go shortstop as well. All right, I'm going to stick with the traditional one, then I'm going to get a little funky with it. Center fielder for my next one.
Great.
Up the middle. Well, you can see we're working up the middle here. We've taken catcher, starting pitcher, shortstop, and now center fielder off the board. When you're rebuilding, ideally you try to get players up the middle. You talked about how people work off of shortstop. The defensive spectrum, same in the outfield. You know, if you can start as a center fielder, but you can't quite make it, you have two other spots that you could possibly go. And so you want the most athletic guys out there. Watching a great center fielder chase things down in the gap, like Byron Buxton when he's healthy, is just so fun. And when they can also hit and they're just kind of that all-together player. My favorite player ever is Curtis Granderson, his peak years in Detroit. I'll never forget. And they're just so fun to watch. So I got to go center fielder for my second one. Then my third, I'm going to go with the fireman, really. Not the closer.
On my board.
But I got to go fireman. I love, and it's come back full circle. Remember, the closer used to be basically firemen. They would come in the Sparky Lyles of the world and the Goose Gossages. They come in for 2-3 innings. They were the fireman and the closer. Well, now we have both. And I think a lot of teams are starting to maximize their utilization with their teams. You talk about the Rays. You talked about Nick Anderson earlier. He's not getting as many saves as people thought, because the Rays see that, hey, if the seventh inning is when things get hairiest, it's time to bring out Nick Anderson, because he's arguably their best reliever. Now, they have a lot of different guys. But I love that teams – it's I'm torn, because for fantasy, it stinks. But for being a smart team, I applaud it. So it's like, I want the guys to be getting saves for fantasy, but I love when a team uses their relievers the best way. And a good fireman, like Hader before he was a closer, and a lot of those guys that you and I talked about earlier, that are the next fireman coming up, I just love that guy who can come in for 2 innings and just decimate.
Two great picks. No need to really pile on with center field. I can think of so many guys I love watching play. Devon White, Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah. I can go on and on and on with just Fred Lynn at his peak. Just graceful players usually in center field. And a lot of times the web gems are going to be those center field catches. They cover the most ground. And the fireman's awesome. I think of the way Andrew Miller was deployed when Cleveland mm-hmm. figured out what he could do. And I love Miller. He said, look, I don't care when I pitch. I don't care how many saves I get.
Just put me in.
If it's the fifth inning, bring me in. You need me for 2 or 3 innings, I'll do it. And it's actually kind of been sad for me to see his career. You know, maybe he's been used a little bit too much, or maybe he's just kind of hitting the attrition wall. But I'd like to see – he got a save recently with the Cardinals. I'd love it if he had a good year, because I just agree. Always loved his approach where, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. I don't care. And I know by that time he had a pretty good contract, but still.
But still.
I want to – there's a guy I want on my team. So I salute those picks. I'm going to pick right field. It's not as sexy as center field. It doesn't have the cachet of center field, but – which a lot of times you get at right field is you get a guy who could be playing center field, but just there's already a good center fielder there. When Mookie Betts get traded by the Red Sox, I was basically depressed for about a month, and I'm still not really over it.
Yeah.
And look, Jackie Bradley Jr. is a great center fielder, and Benintendi, when healthy, is a good left fielder. Right field is so hard in Fenway with the acreage. Oh, it's the sun field. There's very unusual contours. The fans are right on you. Right around Pesky's pole. It's a very hard play. And, obviously, you have the longest throws to make when that throw to third base comes up. And Mookie was unbelievable in right field. And I don't think people realize I think people think about center field's hard, and I think people have this idea that left field is hard when it really isn't, because there's no acreage in left field. You just have to learn the wall a little bit, and that's no big deal. Strepti was great at it, and he trained everybody to think that it was harder than it was. Right field's impossible, and watching Mookie Betts play right field, watching Dwight Evans many moons ago play right field has been just a treat of my baseball fandom. I'm going to pick right field. And then this might be a mistake. I might not be getting the value, and Mel Kiper will be all over me, but I'm going to take first base for just two simple reasons. One, a lot of times, just like a really good-natured slugger type is a first baseman. You know, the Boog Powell type, the Prince Fielder type. You know, if David Ortiz was going to play the field, he would be a first baseman, although he generally played somewhere else. Yeah, Frank Thomas. But also, I've played just about every position on a baseball field in my amateur career. And the great thing about first base is you get to be the mayor. You get to hang out with everybody. Yes. And I remember the last time I went to a Tigers game like a year or two ago, and Miggy had just gone off the DL, and he was holding court with everybody at first base, the umpires, the base runners, just whoever came near his office. He was slapping them with his glove and goofing around with them. And I spent the whole game watching that. I just reminded, first base is just a fun position to play. And I know it's – and if somebody plays it well, it can be really elegant. I mean, think of how well Keith Hernandez played first base, and how aggressive he would be trying to cut down lead runners and stuff like that. So it's not like you can't be an excellent defensive first baseman, because when it's played well, it's really beautiful. But I'm picking it more for the social nature. I think first base is a very social position, and it's a fun place to hang out.
It was my next pick for a lot of the same reasons that you say there. And that's where I played in softball. I haven't played softball in a while with everything going on, but yeah, it's great to always talk, you know, hey, good hit, man. What's up? How's it going? You know, we played in the same league for several years, just, you know, the same people coming through. So that's a great pick. I love both there. And it's funny, I'm going to nerd out for a second, but one of the ways that I really learned the difficulty of right field in Fenway is through MLB The Show and putting like a slower outfielder out there. And like you said, covering that acreage, that's a great way to put it. There is so much out there. And people think that maybe being a left-handed hitter is easy for power because you can wrap around pesky pull. Well, that's really hard to do, especially on command. It's dang near impossible. So to actually get it out of the park in that right field is very difficult. So great pick there with right field. I'm going to go third base here. Then we'll go the hot corner.
Sure.
A lot of great players at the hot corner. And that's another one when the defense, when it's played well, is so beautiful. We have two of the very best right now in Arenado and Chapman. Scott Rowland was always a favorite of mine because of his two-way nature. Loved having him in fantasy for what he was doing for my offense, but then loved watching him because of what he was going to do in the field as well. So I love third base. It's a great position. I never played it myself, but always appreciate folks who can play the hot corner because it lives up to its name, whether you're playing amateur, major leagues, or even softball. So third base there. And then the other one, going to get frisky again, take the bullpen catcher. And the reason I'm going to take this is because I'm doubling up on catcher. Yeah, it's two catcher league. Look, I know not everybody likes him, okay? And I understand that. We can have a conversation about that offline or whatever, about Trevor Bauer. But I was watching one of his recent shows, Bauer Bites, because one of my friends was actually on it, a YouTuber that I know named Fuzzy. And so it was cool to watch them chop it up. And they were talking about bullpen catcher. And he and Clevinger both agreed that the bullpen catcher is one of the most important yet most unheralded people in an organization. For what they do with warming guys up, both at the beginning of the game for the starter and then throughout the game for the relievers, is so vitally important. It needs to be a likable guy that people want to throw to, this, that, and the other. And I always had this dream. Well, again, once I realized I couldn't hit, I was like, man, maybe one day I could be a bullpen catcher because they don't have to hit and I can just catch and it would be so much fun. And so I'm basing it off the fact that I got the cosign from Bauer and Clevinger that they say it's an important position. I'm taking bullpen catcher. Yes, I took two catchers, but I had to do it.
Wow, double catcher. It was a one catcher format, and Spore has gone with double catcher. This is just history being made on the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast. Because you get funky with your final pick, I know I should take second base. What's more ironic than Joe Morgan being the best player of the 70s and than Joe Morgan, the manager, not being able to really put that into words, right? I mean, it's an important position.
Or Joe Morgan, the commentator, not understanding that the advanced stats that he railed against are what made him, are what gets him heralded as such an elite player.
Like, what best illustrates him, yes.
Yeah, he has great baseball card numbers, but what really takes him to the top was the stuff that he railed against every Sunday night for decades.
It's basically baseball's version of Alanis Morissette doing a song called Ironic, where she gets ironic wrong. That's basically the baseball version of Alanis.
That's a great call out, Scott.
I should pick second base, and I apologize to all the great second basemen out there. You get crushed on the pivot, on the double play. I respect you guys. You know, Sandberg won an MVP at second base. I was a huge Robbie Alomar fan, Hall of Famer. So second base, I should pick you. When I'm going to fill out my free agents, you'll be the first call I make. But since you get funky at the end, I'm going to get funky. I'm going to go with the pinch hitter, which is kind of a disappearing part of baseball where everybody wants a million pitchers in the bullpen and the benches are kind of thin. And I'm talking about two different kinds of pinch hitters, not just the career pinch hitter. I remember one year that Rick Miller had a really good year for the Red Sox where he was like the fourth outfielder and he was, for whatever reason, really good as a pinch hitter. And so late in the game, you'd be looking forward to the Miller at bat. And the slash line for his pinch hitting was probably like 330, 360, 410. It wasn't anything great, but he got a lot of hits. And we can remember them.
Relative to a pinch hitter, too.
Yeah, you remember, you know, Manny Mota was a really good pinch hitter. You remember the Kirk Gibson pinch hit home run. And that's what happens a lot of times with pinch hitting. A star can't play. A star is getting a day off. But you know he's looming in the background. And at some point, just like that ace reliever is going to come in, at some point the offense is going to need the best hitter to come in or the big threat on the bench. And that's just an exciting moment. You know, you're like, oh, okay. You know, Aaron Judge isn't playing today, but he's pinch hitting. You know, and now Bryce Harper's getting a day off. The Phillies are making a rally in the ninth. He's coming up. You're not going to the bathroom then, you know? I mean, you get to see Harper take his hacks. So I'm going to go with the pinch hitter. I wish teams would put more pliability on their bench. I hope someday we have rules that maybe allows it. I think it just makes for a better strategic game. So I almost feel like the pinch hitter is kind of dying a little bit, but I'm bringing it back, man. I'm bringing the pinch hitter back. It's the final pick in our Yahoo Fantasy Draft baseball positions.
Fantastic pick. And I like that you got a little frisky with it as well. And I agree that it can be so fun. And the use case that you mentioned of the superstar, when's he going to come in? Is it going to be the seventh inning with two on? They're going to wait all the way till the ninth. Great job there. So yeah, we took some of the traditional positions, but we had to get a little fun with it with some of the more stylized roles. So good call there.
Got to get esoteric. And sorry, Raghu, our producer, he wanted us to pick a loogie as one of our picks. Maybe again, you could maybe bring him in for a workout. I don't know, with the new rules, maybe the loogies are kind of phased out of the game. We'll see how that happens.
Right.
But we've been talking to Paul Spohr today, just a great baseball guest, great baseball mind, and a friend of mine, Paul. Tell our listeners how they can keep up with Paul Spohr.
Scott, thank you again so much for having me on. I always love listening, and then being on is an absolute treat. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Spohr. That's S-P-O-R-E-R. I also stream on Twitch 6 days a week. Same name, twitch.tv/Spohr. Follow my work on Fangraphs. I'm out doing something every day, whether it's an article or a chat or a podcast. But all baseball all the time, and we're going to enjoy it while we've got it. And hopefully we get to the end of this season.
Thanks again to Paul, who was excellent as expected. Thanks to our ace producer, Raghu, in the West Coast, keeping us on the air and sounding great. If you like podcasts, don't forget that the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast is a five-day-a-week production, both preseason and in-season. We get a bunch of different industry guests who are popping in this month, and we get some fun stuff planned for the regular season. So if you like football, you might want to check that out. There's a whole suite of Yahoo podcasts. There's an NFL podcast. There's a college podcast. A bunch of stuff for your different interests in the sporting world. For Paul, for Raghu, I'm Scott. Thanks for hanging out with us. Go hit the diamond. Go hang out at first base. Talk to Miguel Cabrera. We'll talk to you next week with another great guest. Until then, middle relief is the answer. Talk to you soon.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.